Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Grant Bentley, Australian homeopath and specialist in the facial analysis method. Today is January 16, 2012. And I wanted to open up the show today with a couple of quotes in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is celebrated in the United States today. Two particular quotes came to me and touched my spirit today. And the first one is, a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual doom. And you can ponder on that one and ask yourself where our governments are putting the most energy, finances, and actual human energy and power. The second quote is, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And those are two quotes from Martin Luther King Jr. And we're going to introduce Grant today. I'm so happy that he's joining us again on this Monday evening in America. He's a day ahead. He's got the sun shining up a little bit sooner, and he is the principal and senior lecturer of the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, Homeopathic Facial Analysis, that's HFA for short, research in Melbourne, Australia. As a qualified homeopath and naturopath, he has studied clinical hypnosis and has a postgraduate diploma in Ericksonian psychotherapy. Well, he's got a wide range of interests and has gone way past what his original study was. And we're going to talk to him today about the survival instinct, I believe it is, and miasms. Okay.
Hi, Debbie. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank God. So I hope I have it right for our theme tonight.
Yes. Now, if there's anything that you want to ask or question in the meantime, then that's fine. What I'm talking about today is that I just want to introduce people into what I call a miasm as a survival instinct. Now, part of this is if we understand the roles of the different miasms as traditionally given to us from, you know, if we take people like Boracay, for example, you might see under the under sulfur that they call it the Prince of Antisurics, and it has this centrifugal action, and it goes on like this, you know. The reason that that has come about is because, of course, Hahnemann in his chronic diseases talks about specific remedies for specific miasmatic conditions. He talks about mercury as being a specific for the syphilitic miasm, and he talks about fluvia as being a specific for the psychotic miasm. Why that becomes important, of course, in modern chronic disease practice, or the practice of homeopathy for chronic disease, is because what we see in Hahnemann's writings is that he makes it reasonably clear that what we have to do is select a remedy that not only has the totality of symptoms in it, but it also too has the miasmatic background in it. So we then that he's saying, look, can we do a repetitization doing a repetitization and we're considering the risk, then if the patient is sick, then mercury would be a better choice. So we need to understand that the red for chronic diseases needs to be selected in accordance to not only the presenting totality of signs and symptoms, but also in its relationship to the basic underlying dominant miasm of the patient, matching that to the underlying structure or the dominant miasm of the remedy. Now, it's really difficult now when you're looking at this to see whether or not, how is there a dominant miasm in the remedy? I mean, clearly it's not syphilis itself that is in mercury or psychosis that's in suya. So what are we actually talking about when we are matching these two things together? Now, there are two ways of looking at it. We can see it in the sense that it is a remedy that can create the same set of signs and symptoms in that person, but we can also see it as a force of action. For example, when I was just speaking about earlier about sulfur and just taking it from Boracay, and Boracay is talking about how it's the not only the prince of antithorax, but it really has a way, you know, it's called this centrifugal action, meaning that it pushes everything from the centre to the circumference. And so as a result of that, we can also see the miasms in a way of force or motion or action. What I have come to understand as well is that because once you make the mind shift that we're looking at a force of action, that is an encapsulating action of, say, the psychotic remedies or the inward motion of the syphilitics or the centrifugal action of the thorax, then you also begin, there are two ways of as always, once you come up with another way of looking at something, a labyrinth of questions and avenues begin to arise. For example, what we can see is that we can look at the whole psoric action in a patient in two ways. We can look at that as a disease way, that sore affects the skin and it creates a number of allergic conditions, hence its relationship to hypersensitivity, as Herbert Roberts talks about. But you can also see it that we, as we know, in an almost Herring's Law type of way, where what we see is that it is the body that is throwing any sort of stress or infection out onto the surface of the skin where it can do the least harm. Now, this presents two different ways of looking at the miasms. One is the more characteristic disease way of looking at the miasm, but the second way is looking at it from a fashion that it is a way or an action, a force or motion that we use to defend ourselves. And that's what I talk about when I'm talking about miasms as a survival instinct. We have within us, as we know, that everybody has a different miasm in them that is dominant, and if the two miasms are of equal strength, then they can conjoin, so we get tubercular and so on. But not everybody is multi-miasmatic. I mean, this is one of the the points that needs to be made. Hahnemann, of course, in his aphorisms, writes about how two dissimilar diseases, and by dissimilar diseases, we are also talking about different forces of action. So an encapsulating action of psychosis is dissimilar to the repelling centrifugal action of SORA. So where we have two dissimilar diseases, either the stronger will be dominant and hold full sway. So therefore, if the psychotic miasm or the centrifugal action, defensive action of that patient was less strong than the centrifugal action, then the psychotic would be dominant, latent, and the SORA will be dominant. It all sounds very confusing, but essentially what it means is that SORA will be that person's dominant miasm. Two dissimilar diseases, the stronger will suppress the weaker. It will never heal itself and never repel, only the similimum does that. So what we see in patients, of course, is that there will be an underlying psychotic condition, but in this particular example, that the soric miasm is dominant, meaning that a soric remedy needs to be given to this particular patient. But like I said earlier, there are two ways that we can view the action of remedies. And I think we need to be open to this second action. We want to not discount, but we want to include the possibility that rather than a disease action, what we are doing with chronic disease is improving our patient's vitality and their ability to be able to withstand stress. Now, the way that we can do that, of course, is more than just removing disease. We have to be doubling up on their own body's efforts. So when we're giving a chronic disease prescription, what we're doubling up on is their own ability to defend themselves. And I'm becoming increasingly a fan of this way of looking at the constitutional remedy. The similimum, and I understand it might sound semantic, so just bear with me for a little bit, because the organon is really important the way that Hahnemann lays it out, because it lays the foundations of the laws of nature and how they pertain to our remedies in our clinic. And essentially what we have are the laws of similar force or dissimilar force, or opposing forces. When we have a look at the laws of similar force, like I think we've explained once before, if we take things like the protons and electrons and so on, if you've got two protons, positive charges, forced into a nucleus without into a confined space, the one will repel the other unless you have nuclei there in the nucleus to be able to act as a barrier or buffer. So what we see is that two similar charges will repel. This is what happens exactly with the similimum. We do, particularly with acute disease is an external invading agent into our body. And so what we do with our repatriation is that we work out the charge, the life force, because of the symptoms that it creates, particularly the genus epidemicus symptoms. That's why it works so well in epidemics. When we give our homeopathic similimum, that similimum has an equal force or charge, and we just put together the laws of nature that two similar diseases or two similar energies can't be confined into the same space. The stronger will repel the weaker, hence the importance of the potency. When we come to chronic disease, and please feel free to jump in because I know I talk too much and too constantly, so just put me on hold by saying something if you need to. When it comes to chronic disease, everything, the whole world's changed. We know this because Hahnemann was not getting any real effect to the same degree as he wanted with chronic, as he was getting with acute and epidemics. So he knew that there were different laws. Now, one of the major reasons that he came up with the idea of the syphilis psychosis in the sora was because he was a doctor. He saw infecting agents. He saw the ramifications and read about the ramifications of syphilis. He saw it firsthand in his community, how it could transgress generations and be passed on from offspring to offspring. And so from that point, he began to understand that there are acute infections, but there are also chronic infections as well. And so from there, this is why he writes in chronic diseases about mercury being the specific, cerium being the specific, and so on. What he did then, and I think this is kind of a little confusing, and I think that personally, although inflammatory for many homeopaths, I do think that this is the case for nonetheless, and it works well with me. I think that Hahnemann made a slight mistake by saying that every single disease belongs to one of these camps. But what he's doing there, and I forget the actual name of the Aristotelian logic here, but there is a name to it. But what it is that it's that syphilis is a destructive disease, so therefore all destructive diseases are syphilis. Now, we've taken it that way. It's a little bit like the whole, when I talk in some of my online courses, which will be starting soon, but when we talk in those courses, we talk about it's kind of tantamount that, the Irish are famous for liking potatoes, so therefore every Irish person likes potatoes. It doesn't actually work that way. You can't just transpose and go backwards from one bit of knowledge and for it to be equally correct. What we find in our clinic, and I can tell you why this is the case, what we find in our clinic is that not every chronic disease begins with a prior infection. This is not to say that Hahnemann was incorrect when he turned around and he said that syphilis is a chronic disease, tuberculosis is a chronic disease, and so forth. Yes, they are definitely chronic disease, infectious chronic diseases. But there are also other diseases like migraines, which are chronic, depression, mood swings, can be things like irritable bowel syndrome, it can be arthritis. They don't have an infectious disease origin. We are the only profession that says that they do, simply because what we're trying to do is we're trying to remain Hahnemannian. So we're placing everything into one of those categories. But what we see in the clinic really is that if somebody is, most people, for example, when I talk about, and it can be depression, it can be migraine, well, just choose migraines, right, because it's the first one. What will happen is that when we ask what makes these person's migraines better or worse, they always say one or two things. Their migraine is worse, or they might have a block of migraines that are worse when they become very tired or worse when they become stressed. Now, you can transpose those two modalities onto nearly every chronic disease and get the same result. And also, too, what you see, because we're trained in taking people's biographies and learning about the person, homeopathy about the patient, not the cure, we also see that the degree of chronic disease is very often to the same equivalent as the stresses that that patient has endured before that disease. So we begin to see that there are a lot of energetic influences rather than just simply infectious influences only. Another thing that kind of alerted me to the fact that there could be something secondary going on in look, don't quote me on this, but I think it's about aphorism 40 to 43 or something like that. But what Hahnemann talks about is particularly in reference to acute diseases, that there are a number of types of acute diseases. There are those that are of the infectious model, smallpox, measles, whatever. Then we also have those that are created, meaning by poor diet, lifestyle, emotional stress, and so on. But they're still diseases, but they're not infectious diseases. One of the big mistakes was thinking, I think, that he made was saying that every chronic disease has its origin in the chronic miasms. The acute disease is multifactorial, and so too is the chronic. You can undergo a degree of stress for a long period of time, and that stress will be the major contributor. Now, I'll tell you, what alerted me to the fact that perhaps, like the acute disease, that the origins of chronic disease can be multifactorial, is that theoretically, at least, what our remedies should be doing. When we give a remedy like mercury, it really should be peeling off that layer. And so as a result of that, then the migraines that were created by that particular miasm at that particular layer really should not occur ever again. This is why Hahnemann talks about the total and permanent restoration of health, the cure, meaning that it won't come back later on. That layer has been peeled off, never, ever to return. Once you've been in practice for a while, despite all of the theory of what should, would, and could happen, we see that that is actually not what happens. What happens is that we can give a very well-indicated and a good remedy for that migraine sufferer. And that migraine sufferer, who normally might have one migraine every week or two migraines every week, depending on their lifestyle, suddenly after the remedy is migraine-free for quite some time. They might come back in 3 months, 4 months, who knows. But when they come back, it will often be with this sort of scenario. It's very common. I thought I needed to come and see you again because my migraines are beginning to return. I took the remedy, as you said, it's been working really well, but now I just think that I need some more because they're all starting to come back. Now, this is so common. And what you do then is that you question the lifestyle of that patient, meaning that, look, what are the stresses that you've been under? And sure enough, 9 times out of 10, what we find is that that person's workload has increased or that there's been a death in the family or that there's been a lot of emotional turmoil going on in their marriage. Whatever the scenario is, the fact is that that patient is under a lot more stress than they normally would be, and as a result, this old chronic condition begins to return. We know that this occurs in every single one of us. Every single person listening knows that when they become tired or stressed, their moods change in a certain way, and they begin to exhibit these old telltale signs that they are running low on energy. The old migraines begin to return or the sleeplessness begins to return. This is our warning signs that we are overdoing it or that we are pushing ourselves too far. But what you see, and this is, like I said, this is what made me start to think down a slightly different avenue. It doesn't invalidate what Hahnemann's saying. It's just a different way of looking at it. But what you do see is that you do not see that total permanent restoration of health. People under stress will exhibit those old signs and symptoms. And if that stress continues, often those old signs and symptoms will get either A, worse, or replaced by a new groove or new set of signs and symptoms. So it shows that it's very much stress-related, and it's very much related to the energy rather than infection of the patient, and that it isn't peeled off. So as a result of that, I started wondering, well, what is the... I mean, it's quite evident once you know what you're looking for, as Hahnemann's pointing out, that each one of these myiasms really does display itself in a different way. In reference to can a person gain more energy through the remedy, look, again, we're going to go back to the organon, and our job is not just to give pills. Our job is to be able to look at somebody's lifestyle, look at someone's diet. Remember that there is nowhere throughout the organon where Hahnemann does not stress the importance of diet and lifestyle and a physical regimen. Nowhere. He's quite emphatic on this. So the whole idea that everything is the psychology of the patient, that everything is all about just giving somebody a couple of drops or pills and that will make them invulnerable to be able to withstand any sort of stress, that kind of thinking is doing a great disservice not only to patients, but it's doing a huge disservice to homeopathy. Remember that Hahnemann wrote quite specifically that what our task to do is to look at all the errors of diet, to look at all the errors of lifestyle and that patient's health regimen, and to remove them because they are the obstacles to cure, and what remains is what to be prescribed on. So essentially, rather than just reaching for the bottles, I think that it really is important for homeopaths to remember what their primary task is. Homeopaths are essentially stress managers. We are experts in identifying and understanding the stressors of that particular patient. Anything that you want to ask at this stage, or should we just continue? Well, maybe I'll put you to sleep. Okay. Well, what I'll do is that I'll just keep on going then. So what we are is that we are managers of stress when it comes to chronic disease. We have already seen that chronic disease, or at least non-infectious chronic disease, is specifically related to non-infectious chronic disease is specifically related to that patient's energy levels, or any patient's energy levels. When they feel stressed or tired, their chronic disease gets worse. When we can then manage that, I mean, after all, our remedies are only energy. That's why we can able to supply patients with what they are lacking, and as we boost up their energy, like a good night's sleep, all of a sudden they start feeling a bit better. When the stress starts getting too much for them, or they burn themselves out a little bit more, then what happens is that they begin to wear down. Now, we're not talking about thriving on adventure. People who thrive on adventure, like what you're writing on the screen now, is a completely different thing. Thriving on adventure or thrill-seeking gives that person energy. It doesn't take energy away. What we are looking at, we're not looking at the things that excite people. We're looking at the things that drain people. Chronic disease would never occur in a happy, healthy, vibrant body. It occurs in a drained body, at least non-infectious chronic disease occurs in a drained body. And what we've got to do, the very first thing that we've got to do, which is the obstacles to cure, is that we have to find what that stress or stressor is. Now, this leads me on to the idea of miasms as a survival instinct, because what becomes apparent very quickly when you go through people's stories and you can see the stressors and its effect on that patient, then what you begin to see there is that... And I've just lost my train of thought because I'm trying to look at the screen and what people are adding at the same time. I never realised the DJ's job was so difficult. So what we see here is that
Hi, Grant.
The strength oils.
I unmuted myself because what I've learned is when I take notes or type or try and converse on the comment on the chat, you hear all the clicking on the show. So that's why I muted myself. But
that's okay.
You're answering all the questions.
Okay. Well, look, I'll just keep on going. And if you feel that you need to jump in, please do.
Okay. Yes. And I want to say that you're really under pressure, under stress right now, because when I'm doing a show, it is totally multitasking. You're sending messages on Twitter to help tell people to come and listen to us, going on a Facebook saying, Grant's talking live right now, going on Homeopathy World Community and seeing if anybody's there. So it's sort of like going out on the street corner and asking everybody to come in and listen to you talk right now, because we're learning so much about life and it's our stressors. And I also think or wonder whether it's our perspective on the stressors that we have that can be changed through the homeopathic remedy, that maybe it makes something does make us anxious or panicky when we hear sounds or loud noises or something. But when we get our remedy, all of a sudden those things don't bother us anymore.
Well, I think that's perfectly true. And that's one of the ways that people, of course, know that the remedy is working, that the things that were troubling them and troubling them enough to drive them to go and see somebody like us about it suddenly begin to not be such a dominant part of their life, and they seem to be able to handle this a lot more. Now, I know that this is really only a half-hour show and I've gone overboard, but what I just want to say to finish off, and maybe we can talk about this in future episodes, is that one of the things that I've noticed is that there are some, like everything, there are generalized and then there are specific stressors. Now, a generalized stressor, we divide our remedies up. You can, in some things you have to be specific, and in other areas you can really generalize. If we look at trauma, for example, well, we know the inflammatory response is pretty much the same in every single person. That's why what we can say with a real certainty is that if you accidentally happen to slam your finger in the door, then arnica is the first thing that you should take, because the inflammatory response and that whole kind of bruising thing that's happening is exactly the same from person to person. So we have a generalized way of using homeopathy. We also can see that if you had something like, I don't know, let's just say chickenpox, now you have a specific remedy like Andimonium tetraricum that will probably do 80% of all of your chickenpox type of symptoms, and it will be able to deal with them fairly well. So again, you have this generalized approach, which of course is what Genus Epidemicus is all about. What we're going to do in a Genus Epidemicus is that we take the major signs and symptoms as most people experience them, and then we are going to repertorize that generalized experience and come up with the most specific remedies for it. And so that's essentially how it works. Now, when we get into, however, the chronic diseases, and unless there is a PQRS symptom that's there to identify another remedy rather than the generalized remedy, then we generally use a generalized remedy. A lot of generals in that statement, sorry about that. But when it comes to chronic disease, it's quite different. You can't just say rooftox is a good remedy for arthritis. This is where you have to get into the patient, not the disease stuff. And the reason for that is because generally what happens is that the chronic disease that the person is exhibiting with is the result of the different stressors and lifestyle that that patient has endured prior to that disease's onset. And one of the major things that we understand about homeopathy in its relationship to chronic disease is that it has to be specific for the cause. And so because the causes are so different, then we need to take that difference into account. And so what we do is that, particularly with the HFA process, is that I have moved away from how does that make you feel, what do you think about that, you know, all of this kind of, an attempt at of homeopathic psychoanalysis, I suppose, because a lot of the times, you know, you get very generic answers to that. It's actually less specific than what it's trying to achieve. So what I do now is that I get people to just give me their biography. What the major event between 0 and 10, 10 to 17, or 10 to 20, and then 20 to 30, and so on. How you know which stressor should be at the top of the list, because like everything that what homeopathy is about is understanding the laws of the universe, and what the laws of the universe do is that the first thing it does is that it prioritizes from most important to least important. And what we're trying to do is exactly the same. By going through a person's biography, we are trying to examine what are the most dangerous stressors for that person to the least most influential stressors for that person. And there's a very, very simple way of being able to tell that. And I'm running out of time, so I'll finish it at this, and then we can perhaps go into it a bit more next week. But there is a very simple way of being able to tell what stressor is the most dangerous or the most impacting on that person. And that is the stress that has physical ramifications. Because what's happened is that that person's vital force has not been able to hold that stress in either the mental or emotional sphere. That stress has been too strong. And so as a result of that, it rips through the mental, emotional, and then into the physical sphere, draining that person's vitality, and as a result, physical illness occurs. So if a person, for example, was sitting in front of me talking about two different aspects of their life, both of which were highly impacting. The first was their divorce, for example. The second was the loss of their business. The main thing that I would ask is what happened to your physical health after the divorce? Now, if after the divorce we find that, look, the person was very upset, and it took them a little while to get over it, but generally they went to work as usual. Their life wasn't great, but, you know, they got themselves back on track and there were no real physical ramifications. But after their business loss, after their business collapse, they couldn't sleep. They eventually ended up with a flu that turned into pneumonia. And also, too, they had a number of other things, like, for example, their thyroid started playing up, or they needed to go on anti-inflammatories because their joints all became sore and inflamed and they thought that they had rheumatoid arthritis. Then what we see there is that the stressor of business failure becomes far more impacting than the marital breakup. So why that's important is because the business failure would become a rubric. That would become my concentration, because, and then I would just go into the ramifications of that, which would make up the next part of the repertorization. But the business failure is really important because that's the cause. Hopefully that makes sense.
Okay, I'm back. Yeah, so there's about 4 minutes left, and you can tell us now about your upcoming class or classes, if it's more than one, and how people can get excited to start, to contact you or to sign up. Go to your website, I presume?
Well, yes. It's the website is vcch.org. And what we can, so everything is generally on that. It's all the W's, VCCH, Victor Charlie Harry, .org, O-R-G. All the information is on there. If you have a look at the courses, you'll be able to see those there. There's a whole range of different things. We have put up some seminars. We also do cases where we will talk you through the whole process. But the main one, which is starting very soon, is a 15-week online course. Now, on that online course, you can be a participant in the class and ask questions, but you can also, too, because we record it, you can also, if you miss a class, look at it at a later date and catch up at that. So we're trying to make it as time and as user-friendly as what we possibly can. Course starts in February, mid-February, 16th or 15th of February in the US, and that's the short course. And then we've got the 15-week course, which is the full course, which starts on the 29th of March, or the 28th if you're in the US. So if you like that process and you want to learn more, that process meaning the, like prioritising, learning how to prioritise the cause of chronic disease and being able to understand which event is going to be the most impacting, and that is the one that this person's most sensitive to, which tells you enormous amounts about that patient's character and what they can withstand and what affects them and why, then, like I said, that starts in March. That's the 15-week course. And we, like I said, we also have a number of short courses and offerings if people are interested. But look, just go to the website, have a look around, see if there is anything there that interests you. Like I said, it's all the W's, www.vcch.org, O-R-G. And have a look. There's all mountains of information for you to have a look at.
Okay, that's great. And I did want to give a heads up to the folks who are listening that we do have a number of other shows on this channel, Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, that on Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock, Dr. Adil Kasim of India, cardiologist, talks to us about heart health, about diabetes, about lots of different forms of energy medicine, including homeopathy, and he also tells us about some of his cases. And then on Thursday at 12 noon, that's Eastern time, we have Alan Phillips talking about vaccinations and your rights and your freedoms, waivers and exemptions. He talks about contemporary issues, about what's going on in the news and how to approach it for yourself if you're questioning what to do for your children or yourself in terms of vaccinations. And then right after that, we've got Christina Chambreau, Pet Health and Homeopathy. They're telling me there's only 60 seconds left to the show today. So I again want to thank you, Grant, so much for being on with us and teaching us your method of HFA. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody.
My pleasure. Bye, Betty.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.